This is Twit.
The picture I have in the show notes is of yesterday's record-breaking attack, showing basically a timeline of prior attacks. One, and I can't quite read, it looks like maybe it's 2001. Can't see it, but it's, anyway, it's 24 gig that it was like, whoa, 24 gig. Oh, what? And then a few years later, 100 gig, Leo. Oh, my God. You know, 100 gig. And then a few years later, 309. Oh, three times more. More than three times more than 100. 309. A few years later, now we're up to about, looks like about 2016, 650 gigs. Okay, you know, wow. Now, yesterday, 1.7. Okay, so I could say it as 1,700 gigabits per second or 1.7 terabits per second is where we are. A internet melting DDoS attack. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this is the result of a devastating service being exposed publicly. What's really curious is that this had been noted a couple years ago in some of the Black Hat DEF CON style conferences. It might have been one of the two of those. Someone just sort of noted in passing that, and it may have been that no one thought anyone was crazy enough to have this publicly exposed. But there's a service on Linux platforms called Memcache, or because it's a service, Memcache D for daemon, meaning that it's running in the background. It is a very simple, very fast cache. The idea being that because you might have a very complex SQL database query, after performing a complex, lengthy SQL database query, you might want to do some short-term caching. So it could be in RAM or it could be on the hard drive, depending. But the idea being that you've performed some extensive query, you may need it again. You don't want to go back and reissue the query. So you use this sort of this intermediate cache where you use a key or a tag and the data. So it's very simple. You can't do any fancy queries. You can just say, here's a blob stored under this index. And so this memcache says, okay, and it is accessible over both TCP, and yes, I did say both TCP and UDP. Well, we know what that means if it's publicly exposed. The problem with UDP is there is no provision for verifying the source IP of a query. As we've often discussed with TCP, there is the famous three-way handshake. A SYN for synchronize goes in one direction. A SYN with an ACK acknowledging the receipt of the SYN goes in the other direction. And then finally, an ACK acknowledging the receipt of the second SYN makes the third interchange of the three-way handshake. An interesting side effect is that both endpoints have to tell the truth about their IP addresses in order to receive each other's acknowledgments. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. So TCP cannot be spoofed. UDP is used for lightweight internet traffic where you simply say, give me something. Like, give me an IP address for DNS. And DNS is UDP. And DNS has been used in so-called amplification and reflection attacks. It's amplification because a tiny query can generate a large response. So what that means is that an attacker is able to send little DNS queries to a DNS server, which will respond with much larger replies, thus amplification. But because it's UDP, nothing prevents the instigator of the attack, the person sending the UDP packet, from lying about their IP. They put the IP of the intended victim, the target, in the UDP packet so that this the DNS server that receives it believes that guy was asking for a DNS address. And so the larger response goes to the victim of the attack. Thus, the attack is reflected off of the DNS server and amplified, a reflected amplification attack using UDP. Well, there have been a bunch of different types of UDP services exposed and used over time. They all pale in comparison to this one. DNS kind of has to be exposed to be publicly used, but a DNS server normally is not used by the public. It's normally used by, for example, an ISP's own clients. So it's possible, even with DNS, to lock it down so that it will not respond to random public queries from the internet, because that's where an attacker would be trying to bounce their bogus query off the DNS server in order to attack somebody else. So you can lock down DNS. This memcache normally would never be publicly exposed. You wouldn't want it to be publicly exposed. The idea is that it is used for as an intermediate cache for things that an active system is doing. So the first attack, the first big attack that got everybody's attention was about 4 days ago, and there was an attack on GitHub. Not because probably anybody was mad at GitHub, but just they wanted to attack somebody big. And so this was a 1.35 terabit attack on GitHub. In a post in their engineering blog, GitHub said the attack originated from over 1,000 different autonomous systems. Wow. Across tens of thousands of unique endpoints. It was an amplification attack using the memcached-based approach that peaked at 1.35 terabits per second via 126.9 million packets per second. So these are large packets. They're full-size 1,400-byte packets, because this is memcache trying to answer somebody's valid query for data that it has cached.
You know what impressed me was how quickly it was mitigated.
Yep,
that blew me away.
Yes, yes.
And that's Akamai's. That's Akamai's DDoS protection.
Yes, they have a strong DDoS protection. And then yesterday, we saw an even bigger one that broke that record. That was the biggest ever seen, 1.35 terabits per second 4 days ago. Now we're at 1.7. So, okay, what is this? What's going on? So there is a site where this software lives, memcached.org, memcached.org. And they say, introducing themselves, what is memcached? Free and open source, high performance, distributed memory object caching system, generic in nature, but intended for use in speeding up dynamic web applications by alleviating database load. Memcached is an in-memory key value store for small chunks of arbitrary data, strings, objects, whatever, from results of database calls, API calls, or page rendering.
A lot of PHP sites use it. My old WordPress.org PHP-based
site. Well, Leo, get this. YouTube, Reddit, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia, Microsoft Azure, IBM Bluemix, Amazon Web Services.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it is a highly used, very popular tool because, as you said, it's there and it allows, you know, there's very often a slow process to pull something together which may be re-requested. And so what happens is you're able to set a certain size of the cache. It is an MRU, a most recently used cache. So if you keep asking for something over and over, that stays at the front of the list. Something that doesn't get re-requested ends up getting pushed off the end, you know, getting pushed out of the cache in favor of more recently requested things, and those things tend to stay there. So, I mean, if you've got lots of RAM and you can commit a chunk of RAM to this in-memory cache, then it can speed up your system. It's the problem is the server is normally meant to be bound to the local host IP. So it will and it's running on port 11211. So it's a well-known port. That's where the service lives. And it's supposed to be bound to port 11211 on the local host IP. So only on 127.0.0.1. But in some instances where you have a cluster of systems, maybe you do want to make it more widely available. So it is unbound from that particular IP, and it operates on the interface that the system is using. Unfortunately, some of those interfaces, those network interfaces, are public. And a recent query of our old friend Shodan reports 87,811 open memcached servers. The final picture in today's show notes shows the result of a search for the product memcached returned by Shodan on February 26th, showing 25,000, the majority of them, 25,000 of them in the U.S., just shy of 20,000, 19,647 in China, 4,000 some in France, 3,500, a little more than that in Japan, almost 3,400 in Hong Kong, and so on. So there are 87,000 of these on the internet. And what happens is the bad guys are able to, because it's an open server, you're able to fill them remotely also. So the remote attackers are creating single huge blobs so that a single query is able to return like a megabyte of data. They're able to return massive queries. So not only are they open, UDP thus can be spoofed, but they will accept for caching from the public anything that you want to store there, subject to cache expiration. But if it's a large blob, you know, a megabyte blob, and then you are constantly asking for it over and over, you're going to keep it from expiring out of the cache. That is you, the attacker. The attacker is going to keep it from expiring out of the cache by continuing to ask for it while they're attacking somebody. So this is not good, Leo.
Yeah.
This is not good.
So this is not an exploit in the sense that there's a flaw in the code. This is actually how it's designed to work.
Yes. Yes, it was, but it was never designed to be public facing. That's the problem. No, by no means would you want to offer your RAM on your server to the public.
So these are misconfigured Memcached servers, right?
87 plus thousand of them.
Okay.
Yes. Misconfigured. And notice that your own system's performance will drop if the bad guys use your Memcached RAM for their own purposes, because your valid pages and so forth won't be cached any longer. They'll just get pushed out by this blob which is being used to attack somebody else. So it's not in your interest to have them exposed. It's using your bandwidth, which you're probably paying something for, and it's using a lot of bandwidth. But it's not clear how we're going to fix this. You know, once again, notice that the only way these attacks can occur is if an ISP is allowing packets not bearing an IP on their network to egress out onto the public internet. Once again, we've discussed this. The lack of egress filtering. There is absolutely no reason why UDP packets should be lying about their source IP as they leave an ISP's network. Simply blocking those packets would cause them to be dropped, and then that network could not be used for attacking. Now, of course, the argument is, well, yeah, but everybody else's could. It's like, well, yes, well, we have to start somewhere. And unfortunately, no one is preventing IP address spoofing. It's just, anybody pretty much can do it. I've seen some reports of some ISPs doing it, but obviously not all. So, boy, we have a massive new capability. And it's not clear. I mean, the problem is there's no authentication. This is a get a packet, send a blob. Get a packet, send a blob. No authentication on this protocol. Again, the idea being it was never meant to be public. It was meant to be an internal use, tag and data store for quick storage. And I mean, the whole point of it is to be fast. It does run. It can run over TCP, but it also answers to UDP, and it does so with devastating effect. So, wow.